Hi, this is Tom Tresh from RunningAudio.com. In May 2008, Jason Harper, who ran his first marathon in 2005, set out on a 100-mile run around the perimeter of Sacramento. He had a few other runners with him, but they weren't competitors. He followed a course, but it wasn't an official route. He had a goal, but it wasn't to break a personal record. In fact, Jason didn't run a race. Instead, he completed a life-altering adventure that brought extensive awareness to the number of kids in inner-city schools without access to proper health care. On race day, a day he planned for a year, the temperature soared to 101 degrees. During his run, he experienced the standard blisters, dehydration, and cramping. However, he also suffered from hypothermia, a fever, and intense surface heat that caused his skin to completely peel away from the bottom of his feet. This interview reveals how Jason overcame several physical and mental hurdles, including the darkest hours of his life, to complete the extra mile.
I'm excited to hear how came up the idea to run the 100 miles, some of your running background. To take that challenge, I think, is something that a lot of people wouldn't do, and curious to see why you did it.
Sure. I can tell you it's really... It's been a fun journey. I was never a runner, never. I mean, I played college baseball, and so I ran in regards to sports-centric stuff, but never in regards to, you know, long distance. And in 2005, I realized a key component in our culture. I live in Northern California, specifically in Sacramento, but I learned that people were, many people had so many fundraisers going on, and there were so many people pledging to different things. And I learned, or I thought, that people would be more inclined to pledge to pain than they would purpose. Sadly, but true. There's so many great purposes going on. But if I could put myself in a predicament where I would be put through some pain, per se, like running a marathon, because I was a non-marathon runner, people would go, hey, that guy's an idiot. I'll give to that, you know. And so the first marathon I did was the Big Sur International Marathon in 2005. And, you know, had the typical pledge per mile sort of thing. But I added a little bit to it by telling the people that pledged that if I didn't have an official finish, then their pledge was nullified and void. And so I kind of painted myself into a corner knowing that, you know, the 20-plus thousand that I had in pledges was not going to come in unless I finished. So I went ahead and went to Big Sur and got to mile 16 and had a tear in my meniscus and ended up cobbling, Frankenstein shuffling the last about 10 miles of the race. And that was quite a journey in life to try to figure out the how do you get through this when you want to quit, you know, but you have so much on the line. And to give a little backstory, I was running on behalf of inner city education. I'm very passionate about securing equal education for every child, whether they're urban or suburban. I want kids to be able to have a good education, and our inner city schools are really suffering a lot. And so the money was going exclusively to these schools to help buy the academics, the things that they need to present better academic performance to the kids. So I was highly motivated on that front. Well, that kind of has snowballed over the last 4 years that I've done a marathon every year specifically for that cause. And this last year, asked the principal of the school what he believed the single, what was the single hurdle that students were facing, or the single hurdle that caused students to not have better academic performance. And he surprised me with his answer, Tom. He said the greatest cause that, or greatest hindrance, is the lack of health care. And so I kind of started letting that mull around in my mind a little bit, and I asked a rhetorical question that said, what would happen if I could secure or try to find a way to secure health care for every child on this one specific campus of about 400 students? And I realized the only way that that would happen was be to raise greater awareness, because we'd learned that there was about 1.4 million kids in California alone that didn't have health care, and about 800,000 of them qualified, they just weren't enrolled. So the really became, how can we raise as much awareness, you know, to this event? How can we bring this to the marketplace in a compelling way? And so I thought, what would it be like if I routed a 100-mile route around the perimeter of our city, starting at my daughter's elementary school and finishing at the inner city school in the inner city. My daughter goes to a very nice school, but I could finish on the campus of this inner city school. So I routed the 100 miles around the city and asked businesses and people that were along the route to sponsor that portion of the mile. And it was quite the journey. And so on May 15th and 16th, 29 hours, 35 minutes, we did it. And so that's kind of the nutshell elevator version of the run.
So prior to that, you had mentioned that you had ran a few marathons, but it sounds like there was nothing that approached the 100-mile mark. Is that correct?
No. In fact, I had ran, I think, if my math is correct, I think I had done four marathons prior to that, prior to the 100. I did one in 05, one in 06, one in 07, and then one in early 08. So I had done Big Sur, California International twice, and then I'd done Mount Shasta. And so my goal was kind of like in 07 when I started stirring and chewing on this, I kind of put some things out in front of me like, okay, if I can get through, the December 07 California International, if I can get through that uninjured, because I had suffered from some stress fractures and some different things in my shins from just a lot of miles probably too quickly, which I think when you talk about beginner runners, that's a huge thing because the psychological effect of injury can be a lot worse than the injury itself. But in January, I turned around and did a second marathon within 30 days or thereabouts, and my goal was if I could get through those two marathons after that second one, within a month uninjured, then I knew that my training was on. And so the miles ratcheted up pretty quick to where, every Saturday I was doing a 20 or 30-plus mile run. And so, four official marathons, but then a lot of marathon mileage in the training, the ramp up, and that's where the 50Ks came in, which is about 32 miles. I did two 50-milers in preparation for the 100. And then in the 100-mile training, you never go beyond a 50-mile mount. And they say that if your legs can do, if you can run 50 miles, you can run, they say you can run 100 miles because the first 50 you run with your legs, the last 50 you run with your mind.
I guess it's kind of on a grander scale. They always say with the marathon, well, if you can finish 20, then you can
finish
26.
Yes, so. Exactly the same principle because what happens is your leg load or the endurance that is stored in your legs, once they reach like max capacity of endurance, if after 50 miles, it really comes down to fuel and hydration. If you can keep your heart rate low, which prolongs that lactic threshold that I mentioned in the email of the 20-mile wall, if you can keep your heart rate down and you can try to limit the number of times that you go into that lactic threshold, then what happens is that if you theoretically, you should just be able to go indefinitely if, as long as calories and fuel is coming in and hydration. And so I told everybody that I had a couple of great people that helped me build and train for the 100 miles, some very elite runners, and they kept telling me, dude, if you can do 50 miles, you can do 100. I'm like, it does not make sense. It's illogical. It doesn't make sense. And they go, I know, but you know what? We've done it 25 times, and you've never done it, so listen to us.
Yeah.
Okay.
You touched on a little bit, but the whole the mental aspect of it, that final 50 being a more mental than physical. How did you prepare yourself for what you knew was about to come, that mental challenge?
I'm a firm believer in two things, and they can be positive, and they also have their negative counterpart. The first one is triggers. There are triggers that take place in your mind emotionally that can trigger you to negative behavior or that can trigger you to positive behavior. And so, like, for instance, a positive trigger would be, I know that when I start facing some discouragement, there can be some self-talk that goes on. The first phase of that self-talk could be maybe this internal dialogue that's just very specific, like, hey, relax your shoulders, got a hill coming up, breathe. Very simple things like, easy on the feet, keep your rhythm, just that. It's very basic stuff. But as it gets further along in the miles, I would say miles probably 30 to 50, the triggers went up a bit. That self-talk started getting a little bit more involved. Like, I had to start talking to myself, saying, you know what, I got to keep going. There's no option. I can do this. You know what, if I can just make the next medical checkpoint. You know, those types of reminders, that self-talk, that positive self-talk, it was triggering the right behavior to keep pushing and pressing and hammering on. And then when I got in the past 50, or in the last 50, it was probably the most brutal and excruciating, maniacal thing I ever felt or faced ever. They told me that, they said, Jason, you're going to run from 7 a.m. till about 9 p.m., and when it gets to the dark time, my one running coach that helped me on this, her name is Jen Pfeiffer, she said, Jason, it's going to be physiologically dark outside, but you're going to enter in that last 50 miles to the darkest, most heinous hours of your existence. And I'm like, oh, great. Nothing like a nice, calm, kind word of encouragement.
Yeah, something to look forward to.
She said what happened, because it's like something happens emotionally and psychologically when the sun goes down, the media's not, you know, hitting me at every station, the fans aren't out there at 2 a.m. It's just you and the pavement. And that's where, at that point, I really shifted my game to take on two more distinctive things. I went from kind of that self-talk to audible and visual triggers. And let me explain. The audible triggers were, one of my friends that partnered with me on this called, he had me identify who were the 100 most influential people in my life, over my life, from my high school baseball coach to, you know, my family to friends, whoever they are. And so I kind of listed, and I think I came up like 50 or 60 people who really have made an impact on my life. Well, he tracked them down in the 6 months leading up to the event, had them call in unbeknownst to me as to what they were saying. And they left a 1 to 2 minute verbal message that he loaded into my iPod. So on my playlist, every 10 minutes, a voice from my past that I didn't know who was coming next, but I kind of picked up the rhythm that every 10 minutes, which was about every mile, another voice said, hey, Jay, this is your college coach, Steve Eakes. I just want to tell you, I believe in you. You have the ability to not only do this mentally, but emotionally, physically, and spiritually. You can do it. Press on. You know, and then all of a sudden the song came on. And I'm like, some of them made me laugh. Some of them made me cry, but they were just distractions from the pain. But hearing people's voices in your headphones, it really matters. That's why when I read your requests for interviews, and then you responded back with the Running Audio Project, it really resonated inside of me, because I go, man, this has given people the headphone listen that they need to know how and what it's going to take to make it. So the audibles were playing in my ears over the entire 100 miles, and I found myself going back and finding in the playlist some of the ones that really moved me, like the ones that my wife left me. Hearing my 7-year-old son saying, Daddy, you're running for these kids to go see the doctor. I mean, stuff like that. There was no way I was stopping. And then the last part moved from audio to visual, that every mile marker was a poster-sized picture of a child that's uninsured on the campus that I was running for. And so I had different volunteers along the route holding up that mile saying, hey, keep pressing on, you know. And so it doesn't have to be a mile marker per se that audibly pulls you to that next mile. Some people do it by writing a message on their arm in a marathon. Some people during training train with the same hat that has emotional or mental significance. But I think that, you know, we're sense-driven people. What we see moves us. What we hear moves us. And if I can lace those into my running shoes, proverbially speaking, then I'm always going to have a high amount of motivation on the run.
Well, I had never heard of that before, as far as like the idea of, you know, loading up your iPod with positive words of encouragement from people within your life. I mean, you can obviously do that yourself, give yourself positive words, but like you said, when you hear it from other people, that has just got to be extremely, extremely powerful.
I will tell you, Tom, that there were times where I had a pretty significant medical / emotional meltdown around 64 miles, and it was the day that we ran happened to be the hottest day on record for that day in the history of Sacramento, 104 degrees on May 15th. Since they've been taking, you know, temperature measurements the day I planned to run a year ago happens to be, you know, the hottest day. And so my core temperature had really heated up, and the hypothermia being the cold side, the hyperthermia being the core temperature heated side, I went into hyperthermia. I had an elevated temperature of about 104, and so that was causing some nausea. I went into shock, and all the wheels were coming off the wagon at mile 62 or 64, somewhere in there. I had a medical doctor checking me about every 10 miles, and at that point, he just kind of looked at me. He goes, "I'm going to give you 4 more miles to try to get some calories in you because you're crashing calorically." He goes, "But after that," he goes, "you probably need to realize that it's probably over." And it really affected me because there had been so much invested in this. And I think that's a key trigger, too, or that's a key emotional anchor for people, especially beginner runners. To run for yourself is one thing, but to run for a cause, that's something so much better and so much bigger. And I live my life with a principle of giving. I want to give myself to a cause that's bigger than me. And that can go across the board for the people that are running with the Live Strong Foundation or the team, you know, the Team Fit Training, or whether that be, there's so many. Susan B. Komen, the Nike breast cancer awareness. Running for a cause has mobilized marathoning to be something that many people never dreamed of doing, but because they got a cause, it was enough to move them off the couch. And I keep those causes very near and dear to my heart. So when I got to probably mile 80, the sun was starting to come up, and I knew I was less than a marathon away. Some good folks that really mattered to me came out and started running alongside me. I always had about 5 or 6 people running with me, kind of pacing me and carrying some of the liquid and medical supplies. But when the sun came up, the people that I had specifically locked in that last 20 miles were the people that mattered the most to me. People along the whole run, I shouldn't say they mattered the most to me, but people that I knew would bark at me when I needed to be barked at. People that weren't going to be, "Oh, come on, Jay, you've gone far enough. I don't want that." I need people barking at me, going, "Suck it up, dude. You got 10 more miles. If you have to walk these last 10, you're going to make it." So that was a key, too.
Well, I remember seeing one of your videos. I think it was mile 81, I think I had written down, where you had the news crew that was out there, and you had said that you felt strong mentally, but then body was hurting, and you had some blisters and cramping and stuff. Explain to me that's just so tough when your mind, you feel like you can keep going, but when the body just isn't responding, you know,
right.
You knew you had at that point 19 miles to go, and it sounds like you had a support crew with you, but I can imagine there's still something that you got to do pretty deep inside to get that last 19 miles, especially when your mind is going and saying go, 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 but you just feel like your body is, you know,
right.
Not responding.
I think that's first of all, it's a phenomenal question. But I would have never been able to feel mentally strong if I didn't have the confidence in the training that I had done. It's like the old mantra or cliche that says, plan your work, then work your plan, sort of thing. My dad used to say that to me growing up, and I hated it. But in the year of training up to this thing, I had ran and not missed workouts. I had been pretty diligent in training, very diligent in training, pretty diligent in nutrition, but I think that what gave me the confidence to feel that mentally strong was knowing that my body was going to hold up. And I didn't, to say that I didn't have pain in my body, I mean, my ankles were so swollen in that clip. They panned down. You could see my ankles were gone. The bottom of my feet, from the blistering of the heat and the sweat and the water, I had no skin at that point on the bottom of my feet. And so they had super glued the bottom of my feet to give me some measure of separation between sole and shoe. And so to say that I felt mentally fresh, I think it was because the sun had came up. I had just put a fresh pair of my running shoes on. I rotated between about 4 different pairs that had exact mileage on them. And so I had put a fresh pair of shoes on. Nothing was more motivational or raised my morale like a dry pair of socks. To see the sun come up and to know that I was getting closer. And I had made it through the darkest hours of that meltdown with the temperature had resided in my body. I was holding food down. And so I was like, man, all systems are go. But I wouldn't suggest those long miles to people that haven't trained for it. You know, one of the things that I'm committed to as a hobby now is that this story has brought some local awareness to what we do. And over the last I would say, 2 or 3 years, we've put together this extra mile running group where people are running for different causes that are near and dear to them, and it's just about going the extra mile. And I think over the last three years, we've trained about 80 to 85 runners. And here's a shocking fact, is that of the runners that we've that have completed our training leading up to their specific race, we've never had a did-not-finish racer. So whether the lowest miles is a 10K, which would be a relay portion of a marathon, half marathon, full marathon, and we have some people that run with us that do ultras, meaning 26 miles or more, we've never had anybody not finish in one of our races. And that's a pretty staggering statistic over 3 years. And I think part of it is that we focus so much on the mental side of the running. It's not just hitting the pavement and going, oh, you know, I feel okay, I think I'll run today. It's going, no, I'm going to run today, and I'm going to be very aware of my body. If I feel injured, I'm going to take the appropriate steps to deal with it directly and acutely. But I'm not, once I toe the line of that race, unless they're pulling me off the course, to not finish is not an option.
When you're training people, are there any exercises that you do with them, or any routines that help them realize, okay, this is my mind working. It's working in a negative way. I just need to power through that. Is there anything specific to you?
Yeah, I would say most personally to me is that I run with the group most of the runs, unless I have some exorbitant amount of miles that I'm doing, and so they're going to do maybe 10 and I got to do 30, I'll go a different route. But on a good majority of the runs, I'm running with them, and there's two things that I think that we really try to drive home, is we try to get everybody buddied up with somebody. Running in pairs is key, not just to be safe, but mentally. It's mental safety, it's mental strength, because they start to learn each other. And we ask each of them to make sure that they will not leave their buddy behind. So if their buddy starts crashing, they stop with that buddy. And they don't say, hey, okay, I'll see you at the finish, and they stop with them. And so what's fun for me is running along those courses. We run along the American River here in Sacramento, is that I love being able to kind of get a read that someone's dropping back or maybe falling off pace. I'll go back to where they are, and I'll say, hey, do you mind if I run a bit with you? And I'll start talking with them. I'll say, how are you feeling physically? And get through that. And they'll say, I'm doing good. Mentally, I'm just not feeling it. You know, in my mind, I don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, okay, let's do some things here. First of all, one of the things we say is that you've got, and this is mental. It sounds physical, but it's mental. It's that you have to control your breathing. Your breathing can't control you. So if they start getting sporadic in their breathing, where they're like, you know, like that kind of breathing, then there two things are happening. Number one, their heart's beating too fast. Number two, they're running at probably at too much of an elevated pace, and that causes panic. So we try to take it down a notch. I tell them then, secondly, after we deal with their body, secondly is their breathing. The third thing is I say, hey, you got anything you're listening to on there? And they'll say, yeah, I've got some. I go, find your best song. Come on, let's cue up your best song. And again, I'm trying to bring some motivation and morale back to them. And Nike talks about it on their iPod list. Find that song that really jams you up. Find that song that really gets you going, you know. And I'll have them put that on repeat for maybe a couple miles just to start changing the atmosphere around them. And then, again, I go back to those types of verbal encouragements where it may start with just a simple, the things that I would say to my own mind, I'll start saying to them stuff like, hey, strong foot stride, be light on your feet, soft on your feet, hey, you're going to make it, and I'll get all the way up to hammering them at the end going, come on, pick it up, let's go, you got a mile left. And when I run by them and I run with them, they see that it's not just some pipe dream of someone barking at them from a golf cart or a bicycle, but I'm actually wanting to run with them. So much so that, you know, I ran a marathon about 10 days ago at the California International, and I was scheduled to just do a half, and I finished my last half of the marathon, and I stood there watching a bunch of our runners come across, and I was delighted, but at the five-hour mark, I still had two runners out there, so I started texting people along the course and found out that two of them were about the 22-mile mark, so I'm like, well, I only got one option. You know, So I started running back up the course, and I got to them probably around 23 maybe, and they were battling. And to be able to meet them on the course and say, hey, and start talking them through it and walking through some of those practical checkpoints of dealing with any physical pain that we can deal with, breathing correctly, finding some better, more motivational music, and then repeating to themselves the fact that they've trained well enough to finish led us to the place that those final two people finished. Granted, they finished late, but they still finished. And so, you know, it's a great joy to be able to see people tackle and accomplish these Mount Everests of endurance.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and it's such a personal thing, I think, for people. That's the great thing about running, where you're just racing against yourself. You can race against other people if you make that choice, you can do that. But
yeah,
a lot of times you just race for yourself. And crossing that finish line is such a huge, it's a sense of relief and accomplishment at the same time. Yeah, I'm curious. You had mentioned, though, that after you did your 100 miles, that mentally the things that you had to go through after the race were some things that you just weren't expecting.
Oh, man. Okay, so, like, if you see in the end of that one trailer I sent you, there's a news clip where they interviewed me at the finish line. I don't remember that at all, and the only reason why I have knowledge of it is because it's on video. So I was pretty much... I was in the deprivation mode of exhaustion. I had about 102 fever at that point. So once the medical triage had infused me with some IVs, they started icing my core, I started recovering really rapidly, and I felt great. That night even, I felt great. The next day, I was riding in the car with my wife. We were driving, and I heard a song come on the radio. It was like a country song that I'd heard 1,000 times. And I started getting all emotional about something in the song, and I can't even to this day tell you what song it was. And so I'm like, that's weird. So I kind of stifled it, and then a McDonald's commercial came on. You know, hey, Dad, have you taken your kid to get a Big Mac today? Or something like that. And I lost it, Tom. I start crying, and I'm having this emotional meltdown, and my wife is looking over at me, this normally stoic, you know, can be immeasurably clinical, is just melting down in the passenger seat. And she goes, are you okay? And I go, yeah, something's weird, though. What is up? Still have no idea what's going on. A few hours later, someone texted me a finish line picture, and I saw the picture, and I instantly got nauseous, vomited, just from seeing the picture. So at that point, I called my friend of mine who does a lot of psychology, specifically on the cognitive side of life, but she was honed in on helping me for the run. And I go, hey, Doc, you got to help me through this. What's going on? And she goes, okay, first of all, calm down. That high expressed emotional release is the signs that we probably should do some testing on you, because it sounds like you may have experienced some post-traumatic stress episodes where throughout the night it was so painful, it was so dark, you've actually had some trauma to your mind. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? She goes, well, we'll do some testing and figure it out. And then the second thing, the vomiting and such, she said a lot of times when people are under extreme duress, there's a process called disassociation where they actually disassociate from the event. And a lot of times you'll hear about it in abuse victims where they'll just try to detach from reality as more of a survival mechanism. Then as that wall that has caused the separation begins to shrink in and begin to thin, when that thinning takes place and they start to feel again, there is a ton of different emotions that hit them from their senses. And so for me, some of the darkest hours of the night was the vomiting and the shock and the hyperthermia, so that when I saw the picture on the phone that had been texted to me, it took me right back to that place, but I no longer had a wall built up. You know, that separation was no longer there, and I felt the full blow of the emotion that I was going through, and it caused the nausea and the massive crying and just weird stuff, man. Stuff I don't like to really admit, but now I've talked about it a ton since then, so it's all public. She basically had said, you know, that disassociation had occurred and there was some post-traumatic, and I've now been actually reading quite a bit, trying to learn more about what it is inside of my own personality that really longs to push the brink. You know, where's that brink? Where's that breaking point? Not emotionally, but where will that point be where I just go, you know what, I'm done. And why, and more so not where is that point, but why is it that I seek that point? So that's a whole other saga.
I guess that brings me to the next question then. What is next? I mean, what are you looking at now?
I finished the 100 miles, and my family was so gracious with me and flexible with me in the training leading up to it. But my wife asked me two things. She said, Jay, first of all, when I was committing to the extra mile, the 100, she said, how's the training going to affect our family? And I made a commitment to her that I would never run while they were awake. All of my training, I would say not all of it, but 90% of it was either very, very early, so I was done with long runs by 7:30 in the morning. And some of the longer runs I would start running at 11 o'clock at night and run all the way through the night till 6 a.m. to go into work, because I didn't want my family to be affected negatively or adversely from the training. And the second thing she asked me was, what's going to be next? She goes, I know you're going to finish this. And that confidence that she had in me was really a piston that drove me. But she said, what's next? I mean, when you run 100, what is next? And so when I finished the 100, I said to her, I have commit this to you. I commit to not committing to anything until January. And so it's been a great summer and fall of me being able to really dream and just think about in the back of my mind what would be next. And as I'm going into January, and by the time, you know, if anything happens with this posting, I'll be hopefully in full effect, that I'm considering a few things, and I haven't really locked it in exactly, but one of the things I've thought about is trying to do a marathon every month throughout 09, just one, you know, do 12 in a year. I think that would be less hard on the body than the 100. I've thought about trying to qualify for a full Ironman, which would be the, you know, 2.2-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and then the marathon on the end of it. Thought about trying to qualify for that. And then there's a maniacal, masochistic dream I have really low down in the back of my mind that is looking at the Badwater Ultra Marathon that starts at the Death. You familiar with that
one? Yeah.
I'm thinking about Death Valley to Mount Whitney. That's really in the back of my mind. So kind of I think the 12 marathons in a year would be the easiest. I think qualifying significantly for the Ironman would probably be the toughest. The training for it, I would say, is the toughest and probably the most expensive, because you got to get to, if I could get into Kona, that's where I'd want to go. Or the last one would be, you know, ramp up and do the 135-miler down at Badwater. So those are kind of dancing around in my mind. Which one of them, I don't know. For the sake of my cause, here locally, because again, I told you I'm driven by cause. I've talked, those three that I've told you, I hadn't talked publicly with only just a few people, but the one I have started doing some logistical research on is, I work right off of the main freeway in Sacramento that quite a few cars, they say about a million cars a week drive by. I've had this harebrained idea of seeing if I could get the permitting to erect a scaffolding that is high above a billboard, and perhaps trying to do 24 hours on a treadmill, and seeing if I can get 100 miles in 24 hours under controlled temperatures, you know, where I could control the temperature. It won't be just blazing in the sun. And, you know, that would bring the awareness to a whole other level, because the cars driving by, you know, I've had these illusions of grandeur of a billboard on one side that says, here's a 1-800 number to keep him up, pledge your money to this number, and 1-800 number to bring him down, pledge your money to that number. And if you feel bad for me, call the 1-800 and bring me down. And whichever one raises the most money on a per-hour matrix, we minus an hour or add an hour. So who knows? I have a bunch of harebrained ideas.
Well, that's definitely outside the box, but I think it's a great idea. That takes what you're doing and then incorporate some out-of-the-box marketing type of things, too, that could really bring some great exposure.
You know, I think that's what I really am hungry for, is the exposure, because the school that we're working with currently, about 70%, the kind of the end of the story, the epilogue to the story, is We've currently got approximately 70% of the children of the school enrolled in healthcare. We raised probably with the 100-mile run about $40,000 in cash and about $40,000 in medical goods and services with dentists, optometrists. And so we feel like we were a success, especially because it brought such awareness. But when you're talking about running on a scaffolding that's 90 feet above, you know, this main thoroughfare with these banners hanging off it that are 30 feet wide and 90 feet long, I've got some really, really great supporters here, philanthropists in our area, that I would probably hold back from having them pledge and asking them to simply say, hey, if I make the 100 miles in 24 hours on the treadmill, would you match what I had raised in the 24 hours? So it kind of becomes a two-for-one, and that would just be an impeccable thing that we would accomplish if we could accomplish it. And talking about mental training, I would have a much more difficult time running on a treadmill for 24 hours because of the sheer monotony. But I know Dean Karnazes has done it, and I think he did it in Times Square, and I know it's been done, but it's kind of a headache to stay there in the same place for that long.
Yeah, I remember when he did it, he had you could watch him live online.
Yeah, you know, that's an added thing to it that I would probably want to add to it. We would probably have a total of 3 treadmills on top of the platform. You know, we're guessing it would be 90 feet plus up if we go that route. And again, logistically, I'm just starting to research, could I get the permitting to do it? Could I get a scaffolding company to do it? The treadmills I've got unlocked down through a health club. But I would have 3 up there to where we would have one that's a contingent for me to run on. If one broke down, I would immediately jump on the next one because I don't want to have something lost based off of a technical snafu. And then also we found that there was a massive response from great people, business leaders, sports athletes, media personalities here in our city that were interested in the 100-mile run. And I actually started inviting people out to run with me that were very high profile in our city. Well, that other treadmill could be used for just that. We could bring people up and, you know, so-and-so from the local radio personality could run, you know, an hour with me. And one of our local gold medal Olympiad, WNBA Hall of Famers, she ran about 20 miles with me. The principal of the school, a great story, he ran 50 miles with me through the night. He's a marathoner, so he had been training to do the last 50 with me. I'm part of a faith community, and the pastor that is my direct supervisor, he ran the last 13 with me. So just a lot of great opportunities from people from all sorts of the culture and the community to come get involved. They take ownership in it, and I think it's what you said. It becomes a great marketing machine, a great marketing engine.
Excited. Yeah. Keep me updated, don't you? You got my email address. Keep me updated. Let me know
your
thoughts are on that.
Who knows? I might. Exactly. I don't... I have to get to where I'm at, and then I have to just dive in and just decide I'm going to do this, you know. There's something very appealing to me about the Ironman. It might be because I just watched the championships on Saturday, and that's, like, fresh in me. But the swimming would be probably the greatest challenge. And then there's something about touring the United States, doing one marathon a month. That's just fun. But I think that's probably the easiest when it comes to the body, you know. But the one that I think would help my cause the most is high above the city on a treadmill.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that could even garner some national attention.
So I would definitely keep you posted, but, you know, just being kind enough to include me in your interview process, I'm very thankful for that. I'm thankful that you would listen to me ramble.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Well, I've got one final question that I
sure
want to ask you, and it's because, I mean, just the past few years with your running, you've been through a lot, but it just wasn't all that long ago that you were still a beginning runner, and you had your own struggles yourself, I'm sure, getting started, or you've reached a point where you thought, well, I don't know how much more mileage I can put on. I want to get your thoughts on, for those people out there who may think that they've reached a point where they can't go on, or that their mind is telling them, well, okay, I just did a half marathon. There's no way I could do a full marathon. you did a full marathon and you jumped up to 100 miles. So if anyone knows how you can break that barrier, I think you'd be the one. What kind of advice do you have for someone that may be going through that right now?
I think that key is came to a quote, a friend of mine who does some special forces stuff, who's gone through extreme training, I would say. He said, Jason, he goes, understand this. He goes, if you can get this into your mind, you'll never, ever, ever question your endurance again. And I said, okay, what's that? He says, when your body is at 50%, or he says, when you feel like quitting because you're completely exhausted, your body is only at 50% expended. So when your mind starts saying, that's it, I got to shut this down, I got to quit, he says, you're only about 50% of your capacity. You're only halfway, you've only halfway used what you can use. So if someone thinks that, wait, I did 26 and I made it, well, with some increased training and some engineering of the diet, man, 52 is right around the corner. I would say, but the next progressive jump would be to a 50K, which is, I think, 32 miles. When you attach a cause to it and you add to it the triggers audible of people encouraging you, and when you add to it the visual effects that are maybe written on your hand or your arm or your hat, and you've got all these things working in concert, anything is possible. Anything is completely possible. So whether or not he was just using that as a motivational technique, whether or not that's even accurate, I could care less. I just remember when I'm about to shut down, I'm like, man, I still got 50% in my tank. I keep saying that, and whether, you know, it's not failed me this far, so it's been a huge thing. But, you know, for the person that's in that beginning phase of maybe walking or jogging or just starting to kind of do a hybrid between the two, there's a term that we teach all of our runners that's called praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S. And essentially praxis means you're more inclined to have a feeling birthed out of an action than to wait on a feeling to start the action, meaning you're more inclined to have a good feeling after you've done what you know you have to do than laying in bed waiting to, you know, I'll wait till I feel like getting up to go run. Does that make sense? So if I lay in bed and go, you know, I'm going to lay here until I feel like it's time to get up and go run, I'll never get up and go do that action. But when my alarm goes off, if I just get up and go run, at the end of it, I'll have the feeling I was looking for. And so we teach them to just be committed and don't negotiate on a said commitment. If you said you're going to do it, just do it. And through all, so I don't know if that answered your question.
No,
but
that's perfect. That is perfect. Well, what about for people that may hear this and they'd like to get a hold of you? Or do you prefer people just send you an email? Or
a couple different ways. They can visit us online at extramilerun.com. And they can also go to jasonharper.cc. There's contact information on both of those websites. Extra Mile Run is really centric more about my running world, the kids at the healthcare and the school. But there's a 1-800 number on there that they can call that gets a hold of us, rings through to our offices. And then the jasonharper.cc is basically for people when I go out and speak or different things like that about assortment of things that I do. So either or, they can do that. But I welcome people, and we'll talk to anybody, you know, that'll listen, especially when it comes down to becoming the best version of yourself.
Well, I really appreciate the time and all the information, and I think a lot of people are going to get some great ideas just from listening to your experience. Thank you very, very much.
That I appreciate it, Tom.
For more information on how you can train your brain for running success, please visit www.runningaudio.com/runners.